You know, the U.S. is a signatory, Barbara Hines, to the U.S. Convention Against Torture. These people, many of them are fleeing horrific violence in their own countries. Is it against the law for the U.S. to deport them?
I think the problem with this is that many of the women are either unrepresented or they have substandard immigration lawyers. And it's very difficult for in an adversarial system that we have, which many countries do not have, to present asylum and Convention Against Torture claims. But yes, we are a signatory not only to the Convention Against Torture, but to the Convention on the Status and Protection of Refugees. And I think that our government is not complying with those international norms.
Of course, we'll continue to follow this issue. Barbara Hines, longtime immigration lawyer, and Katie Shepard, managing attorney for CADA Pro Bono Project in Dilley, Texas. Thanks so much for joining us. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is hiring a director of finance and operations, as well as a director of development to lead our fundraising efforts. Visit democracynow.org for more information. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Sam Malkoff, Robbie Karen, Steve Martinez, Hani Massoud, Juan Carlos Davila, Pedro Rodriguez. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is WHFR, Dearborn. And now it's time for a public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR.fm. Remember, staff, do as I say, not necessarily as I do, in case I mess up somehow during this hour show. In any event, very sad news to share with you on this show, which is archived, of course, on our website, and so you can hear the same story, although I understand our WHFR DJs are already doing their condolences and expressing their sympathies for the passing of Joanne Korczynska. Joanne has been our WHFR Blues music director for many years, has done the blues show Highway 61 since 1995, over 20 years actually. She's been a member of the station actually for about 5 years before that, doing world music and other shows for us, by the way. And so she was our oldest alumni and staff member, in fact, and was around the longest time. And we will miss her greatly. I'd like to share with you the obituary that was written, the eulogy, in fact. It was written by one of her two sons, Ed Korczynska, and is on our WHFR.fm website now, as well as the Detroit Blues Society website. Joanne Korczynska, age 82, of Dearborn, Michigan, passed away January 6, 2016. Joanne was born November 3, 1933, in Detroit, the daughter of George and Joe Cessna Selke. Cessna is her maiden name, I believe. A graduate of Cass Tech, she worked in Hudson's Display Department. In 1958, she married Edward M. Korczynska, 1932 to 1996, with whom she shared the joy of music appreciation. She was a professional storyteller. In fact, I may add here that she took classes in interpretive reading, as it's called professionally, and worked with Dr. Eileen Sundstrom of our speech department at that time. And competed nationally, in fact, in many contests, won many honors, and as a professional storyteller, that means, folks, you get paid for entertaining people with stories. The only connection I know with what's going on these days is Moth Radio Hour, where people get up and tell stories, not necessarily stand-up comic stories, although sometimes they're funny, but and usually their stories are based on real life. Professional storytellers usually either present in total or adapt work from great classic literature or cultural myths to enhance the appreciation of those great works. And she did that many, many, many times. Was also, I know, a member of the Michigan Organization of Professional Storytellers, too. From 1995 through 2015, the obit says, it continues, Joanne Korczynska was the DJ of the Highway 61 Blues Show. And you'll notice in the obit there that her name is spelled, the second time it's mentioned, with an A at the end, not an I. And she chose to do that at times because she sort of pronounced it Korczynska, even though it's S-K-I. At least that's the way I heard it, and that's how I thought was the difference. So the article has her last name spelled two different ways, but, you know, it both of were ones that she used, actually. So she was certainly, of course, a great DJ for Highway 61 for all those years, and produced three Uncut Detroit compilation CDs. I helped co-produce that, as well as George Bednar, whose label at the time, Venture Records, actually released those albums, and we're going to be featuring some songs from those albums from 2 to 6 today, as well as others that were Joanne's favorites. And of course, there were so many after 20 years of contact with the local blues musicians, as well as all the national blues artists, too. So many favorites, we can't possibly get those all in, but that'll be going on. To continue, she was also awarded a Detroit Blues Society Lifetime Achievement Award. I think that was in 2005 or 2006. She is survived by her children, Edward, and his wife, Beth, and Robert, and his wife, Millennia, and by two grandchildren. What a wonderful life, the obit says. And she did have a very full life and added so much, not only to her listeners here at WHFR, but to all of us that interacted with her, from musicians to her neighbors and so on. As the official obit says, there will be no funeral. A remembrance party will happen later this year. In lieu of sending flowers, plant flowers, and that's in quotes, in your own life. That was her request. In fact, not having a funeral, that was by her request, too. That was her wishes that the family is following here. And the statement concludes, she leaves you with a message of peace and love, which is the way that she ended all of her DJ shows here at WHFR. So as the producer of her show, sitting side by side and helping to pull music for her the last several years at WHFR, I have to say it's going to be very difficult to fill the space. Oh, radio moves on. We have to keep giving you the music, and we'll do the best we can with our volunteer staff here. Always looking to the new music and supporting great music artists. That's what WHFR is all about, and Joanne was a great supporter for that. She helped raise a lot of money, too, and give attention to a lot of Detroit area blues music artists. We did more than a dozen, maybe two dozen blues concerts in the last 20 years that she was with us that helped raise needed money to keep WHFR going for all the music formats. And in fact, it was one of the single most solid fundraising activities we ever did. And she was the one behind it all. She got the artists together. She got them to work together with the venues, and made sure that all the money from all the cover charges, if you will, door donations, went to WHFR. And so obviously we appreciate that very much. She was the you know, one of the ultimate volunteer DJs that we could ever expect to have, not just for her length of service, but for the way that she treated everyone and the way that she celebrated and focused on all the music and all the artists on her blues show too. So we miss her a lot. Kitty Love will be doing Highway 61 today, starting at 2 o'clock, and I'm sure she'll have many things to say too, and recollections. I will end the show today, in fact, just so you stay tuned through the news and local events that the show is known for mentioning, with a special reading of a short story that was actually part of what might be referred to as the Big Read now, but it was called something else a few years ago. And Joanne actually recorded it as a great storyteller. She recorded her version of it. And it's one of my favorite short stories from my youth, in fact. And it was a classic. And for that particular year, everybody had to read that and read it out loud. So it was a very interesting experiment that year. And I happened to discover that we had saved Joanne's version. So in honor of her storytelling career, we will hear her voice at the end of the show reading this short story. So stay tuned for that, as they say. Luckily, we're non-commercial. We don't have to break for a commercial spot here. In the stories from Dearborn Press and Guide this week, of course, we have to mention, and I'll make some comment about, because remember, all the opinions expressed in this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, staff, faculty, or students, or administrators, or Board of Trustee members, for that matter. But protesters marched on Michigan Avenue wanting justice for Kevin Matthews. I'm sure you've heard the story. If you watch the local Detroit area news, I'm sure there was video coverage of that on Wednesday. The Reverend David Alexander Bullock of Greater St. Matthew Baptist Church in Highland Park and spokesman for a group called Change Agent Consortium led the protest. Detroit man Kevin Matthews, as you may already know, was killed by a Dearborn police officer. And that rally happened on December 26, a couple weeks ago. My comment here, and I guess I have to make a comment, is that there was a statement from Dearborn Police Chief Ron Hadid very, very quickly after this event took place. And the situation is identified in most of the stories, Press and Guide and Times Herald from this last Wednesday, in fairly accurate form. But it seems to me, and no one really knows except anybody who was a first-hand witness, of course, is that it was quite clear that Matthews was wanted on a Redford Township probation violating a violation warrant. So he had violated his probation, and the police were looking for him. And he had escaped from officers earlier in the day after committing a larceny in Dearborn. Now, I know it's, you know, you have to go to a court to be acquitted or found guilty, but supposedly he committed larceny. That's a theft, right? And so they were looking for him for both reasons. So he had committed a felony, apparently, as well as violated probation. A chase ensued, which the stories don't seem to mention here, went on for a block and a half on foot by this one officer. And as he came up to him and tried to physically stop him, fight ensued. And according to Chief Hadid, and I don't have that paper in front of me now, but and I hope I don't get it wrong, but Chief Hadid, Dearborn Police Chief, stated that in that scuffle, the suspect, to be fair, Kevin Matthews, grabbed or reached for anyway, and either had in his possession briefly or almost had in his possession the firearm carried by the police officer. You know, it's in that sort of snapped over case. And so if they were scuffling a lot and it was a block and a half run, I don't know if the police officer was in good shape or not, but that's a problem of carrying a loaded weapon, whether it's concealed carry for an average citizen or for a police officer. You get into a scuffle, and that's the first thing they'll want to go for, if they're smart, because that would be the superior force to stop that incident from happening and to escape if they're a criminal. So it is a problem of carrying any firearm, is that the bad guys, whoever they might be, might grab it, take it away from you, and use it on you. Well, the officer supposedly, and again, this was reported by Chief Hadid, that the scuffle ensued, and at least, and I got it in front of me, that Matthew grabbed for that pistol. And the police officer, who has not been identified yet, although he was a five-year veteran of the police department with a clear disciplinary record, who is now on administrative leave, used it. He took it away from, or took it out of what might be the use by Matthews, and fired the gun at him several times. It doesn't say how many times in that release, but apparently it was pretty up close there in that scuffle. And, you know, amidst a scuffle, maybe the first couple shots didn't stop the scuffle. In any event, there was nothing like, 16 times it was fired or something. We don't know. We're going to have to wait for the full investigation from the City of Detroit Police Department. They're the ones undertaking it, and they're going to investigate, and we'll get a report. So certainly, it's terrible that any unarmed suspect has to be shot and killed, for that matter. There are times, I thought that if a police officer says, "Stop, or I'll shoot," you have to stop or they will shoot whether you're armed or not. Now, I may be wrong about that, but I see that in the movies all the time, although in many cases they know that a major crime been committed. In this case, remember, it was not just a probationary violation, but they thought that Matthews, who had escaped from them earlier in the day, had committed a crime in Dearborn. And so he was trying to be apprehended for that supposed a crime that he supposedly committed. Okay. So I just thought I'd bring that up, is that people should protest and let their voice be heard, but that there's been anything done wrong by the Dearborn Police Department or the officer involved remains to be investigated. And I don't think the Detroit Police Department would cover anything up. Okay, they've always been sort of competitive with, although we have a good working relationship with them. Actually, our Dearborn police chief formerly was with the Detroit Police Department. So I think they will be extremely fair, and we should wait. I think the phrase I often use is, let's not jump to contusions as well as conclusions about what really happened. Let the facts come out. Hopefully, unlike the situation in Chicago, it won't take a year to find out. But in this case, I believe there was no video tape that we can look at. And even if there was video, hey, that's only one point of view. It doesn't necessarily give the whole story. But there was no video, to my knowledge, for this incident. So just trying to keep calm and look at the facts. And that's what I recommend to all our listeners that they should do in terms of the Kevin Matthews situation. It looks like he was justly asked to stop. He didn't. A fight ensued. And according to Dearborn Police, when he at least grabbed for the officer's gun, then the officer did take his gun and fire a couple times to end the fight, and or the chance of Kevin Matthews to get his gun and use it on him. So we don't know anything more. And I just want to leave it at that and just say that these stories come up and people get excited, and people who really don't know the facts go out and start protesting. And just because this has happened elsewhere in the United States, in one way or the other, that is, a police officer, especially white police officers, shoot and kill an unarmed criminal suspect who happens to be black, doesn't mean that's the same causes, the same situation as anywhere else, okay? We have to look at the details and get to those conclusions relatively quickly. It's true. There's a lot of things about the judicial process that seemed to drag on for months, if not years, and that's not good. But we need those investigations to be done thoroughly and completely, and I think they will be until we know anything further. Also, the other story, which is a state story, and you heard it even as part of Democracy Now!, the Friday only at this point, national news show that tells the stories that many other radio station news services don't. I did spend, I think, about 10 minutes of their hour today talking about the Flint water situation. And people around the country have been, average people, tweeting things, ridiculous things, I think. And I'm not going to mention some of them because they're too ridiculous, but certainly the state of Michigan did not do the right things. This last Tuesday was a press conference, and of course the head of the Michigan Environmental Quality Council, whatever, MDEQ, anyway, you figure out what the letters stand for. He resigned, and then it's the spokesperson of the group resigned after that, the next day or whatever. Who was responsible there? On WDET this morning, on the Detroit Today show with Stephen Henderson, Representative Dale Kildee, I think is his name, Congressman, U.S. Congressman, I think, or is he too in Michigan representative? Well, in any way, he's a Democrat, but he was commenting on it. It looks awfully like there's a, in terms of statewide administration, a bias towards, well, he didn't say it this way, but I'll say it this way, poor people. And the fact that Flint is a poor city with a lot of poor people in it, and it's declining in population all the time. And even though GM did announce, I think they're going to try to rebuild and set up a factory there again, not like the Buick factory was many, many years ago, but they were going to open up some new facility there that would, a couple hundred jobs, I think, but that's not going to save Flint or the decline. And Flint is, by the way, known nationally as the third most dangerous city to live in terms of crime. The third most dangerous city, not just in the state, but in the whole country. Now, that's obviously a city with a certain amount of population, perhaps. There's different, we don't know how that survey came up with that criteria exactly, but it's still, whatever the criteria was, it means that Flint is a pretty dangerous situation with a good amount of crime. But that doesn't mean that all the people are criminals. No, it doesn't mean that all the people don't deserve to have fresh water, clean water, healthy water to drink. And whoever made these crazy decisions to just open the pipes and use the Flint River water, they should have known better. And maybe there should be criminal charges. And U.S. Attorney General, that is the Attorney General of the United States of America, that his office is investigating. Or is it her office now? I don't even know who's the current Attorney General since Eric Holder resigned. And I was just wondering, one of the new laws that the state has come up with is kind of interesting. Where is it here? These laws that were passed in December, and some of you heard about some of them before, but this one has been signed into law, I believe, by Governor Snyder in the last week or so. Michigan legislature unanimously passes criminal intent reform. And this does sound pretty good. For example, the bill provides legal protection, on the surface, legal protections for individuals by clarifying how certain crimes may be prosecuted. We don't want to over-criminalize at the state and federal level, which has been documented very well that's happened. The number of criminal laws increases every year, and in a troubling development, the use of severe criminal sanctions for regulatory violations is becoming more common. In Michigan alone, more than 3,100 criminal prohibitions can be found in state statutes and many other penalties promulgated through administrative regulations. So how many of you know 3,100 laws in Michigan that you should not break? Right, almost no one. I often wonder if the police officers are even could recite the 3,100 laws from memory. The law addresses criminal statutes that fail to require a culpable mental state for the conviction of the crime. The culpable state of mind is often indicated in statute as by the words intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly. These are the mental states of the accused that the prosecution needs to demonstrate in order to convict. And the reason I brought this up, because that sounds, okay, so if I don't know the law exists, so I did it unknowingly, it's a good defense. They're not going to prosecute you for breaking that law if you did it unknowingly. Now, in my simplistic way, I thought it was always true that ignorance is no excuse. And until this law passed, you know, that was true. I also wonder about stupidity. In other words, you weren't ignorant of it, but you didn't really know what was going on. You know, you didn't know the details, and you didn't know it. You didn't have clarity on it. All right. And I'm just wondering here if this isn't the defense, you know, once the investigation by the U.S. Attorney General is done about the Flint water crisis and who caused it and why and when, to avoid prosecution of anyone in our state government. Because if they didn't do it intentionally, and how do you prove that? If they didn't do it knowingly, well, I didn't know that all that lead all of a sudden would be coming out of the pipes. You know, I didn't know that. Yeah, because you don't know science. Apparently the head of the MDEQ was some sort of political appointee by Snyder who didn't know science. He didn't really know anything about the science of the environment. The facts. So how could he... Oh, yeah, water is water. Yeah, let's use that Flint River water and use the old pipes. Yeah, right. So I sure hope that the excuse of stupidity and ignorance is now not justified for committing any of those 3,100 violations that are possible. And I hope that people can get punished without... Because I think we do have a lot of people who are ignorant, certainly of the laws, but also stupid and uncaring. They don't care about the consequences. They just make their decisions in their small little worlds, and they don't think about the bigger consequences. Come on. If you're in government, you're representing the need of the public. That is all the people. Not just a couple people, but all the people. So it's a terrible situation. It's been covered in the national news, this water situation in Flint. And something needs to be done right away. Dale Kildee, Representative Dale Kildee, was saying that this morning on Detroit Today. Let's get some fresh water in there. Not just surreptitiously, that is sort of sneakily making available some water filters that they pass out. Let's get some fresh water in there. Let's make some changes now. Let's improve elementary education, because the kids that have been drinking that lead-contaminated water have lost some of their brain power, to use a non-technical term, okay? But with early education, and, you know, we can maybe compensate for some of that. More intensive education can make people smarter. Yes, it can. Either those who drank lead-tainted water or those that didn't. And so let's get something happening now. No. Apparently, there were the Karen Weaver, mayor of Flint, had a really fun, positive sit-down talk with Governor Snyder yesterday in Flint. And it was all positive and, you know, relentless positive action and blah, blah, blah that the governor always talks about. And nothing has happened. Okay? So maybe some of the voters will remember these things when the time comes. However, I'd like to switch to a couple of statements, even though they're long. John Conroy is not here with me, our WHO news director today. I hope you're okay, John, out there. I haven't heard from you, although I haven't checked my emails recently. Craig Foran, who is an opinion writer, former fantastic journalist, editor of newspapers in this area, he does write columns that are not shared with the Press and Guide in Dearborn. They used to be. Because he lives downriver, so he's only allowed to write columns about downriver, I guess. Maybe he's gotten too many complaints from the good people of Dearborn about his opinions. So his first editorial about 2015 was on December 30th in the News Herald, downriver newspaper. And he talked about the things that he was, you know, regretted the most, the sad things that happened in 2015. One is, of course, the whole fixing the roads dilemma. Remember, as he points out here, of course, the funding mechanism we now have in place to fix those roads has funding holes you could drive an overweight truck through. And it won't start for a couple of years. And by that time, the people in the legislature and maybe even the governor who voted this into law will be out of office. So we can't hurt them because they won't be around anymore. Thank you, term limits. So, you know, great term limits where politicians know that anything they do won't come back to hurt them. So they don't need a conscience. They don't have to have compassion for anybody. Again, my humble opinion there against statement against term limits. Okay. And he also talks about the two bridges that had not been fixed yet, although I understand the 4th Street Bridge over the River Rouge is open now, at least a lane or so, but the Jefferson Avenue Bridge over the Rouge River is not. It continues to stay closed. I think that's the situation. And, of course, they have announced that the I-75 bridge over the Rouge River will undergo an $80 million remodeling job in 2017, and they're going to detour all southbound traffic off I-75. And, of course, where is it going to go? Through River Rouge. Who knows if Jefferson Avenue Bridge will be open by then? Which, he says, leaves only 4th Street and Dix Avenue as southbound alternate routes. And, of course, all that money to fix the bridges and to fix the roads won't even start flowing until 2017, 2015. The first couple of years, the money that is raised will be small, but also it's just to pay off the debt that we've already got on road repairs from the last 5 or 10 years. And then he talks about, in the December 30th opinion, Craig Ferrand here again, about income inequities in America. And he did research over the past 30, 35 years. The top 1% saw their wages rise by nearly 41%. And the working class saw their wages rise by a mere 6.1% over 35 years, which, by the way, folks, doesn't come up to inflation at all. And the poor, over 35 years, their wages declined by more than 5%. And in additional research he did, in the last 6 years, since the housing collapse and the subsequent Great Recession, that was, what, 2008? The results were even more startling. The wealthy continued to grow their incomes, and these are direct quotes from the studies he found, by more than 3% since 2007. And the working class, though, lost nearly 2%, and the poor lost more than 4%. And this is just in the last 6 years, so it's even worse than the per-year increase or loss, or better, for the rich anyway, reported in that earlier statistic. And those statistics are 12 months old, he says. Well, then we shift to his opinion this week, which was published in the News Herald website, thenewsherald.com, this last Tuesday, January 5th. And he quotes civil rights activist Malcolm X, "The future belongs to those who prepare for it today." That's a good quote. Doesn't matter who it's from, in fact. And he does talk about the new Ford Street Bridge over the River Rouge is now open for business. It's a single-span replacement of the original twin-span bridge that had been pinned in the upright position for months. So I don't know the difference between a single-span and a twin-span. Maybe it's two lanes, one direction. Did the twin-span have one lane in each direction on each part of that bridge? Well, in any event, that is open, and it's been promised for more than a year, and postponed three times over that period. So he's happy to say he doesn't have to look forward to that in 2016. But other things that he's talking about, let's see. He's hoping that Jefferson Avenue Bridge, we just mentioned, is going to be open in 2016. He says he actually heard reports state officials are predicting a December opening. Sadly, he says they didn't specify which year. And he goes on to mention, "Do you remember when local leaders floated the idea of separating the Downriver area from Wayne County and creating a separate governmental entity?" And says, "I think the plan was to call our new county South Shore, or something like that." Well, it won't happen in 2016. But it really doesn't need to, he says. "If only our leaders finally started speaking and acting as one voice. It's a wish I continue to have for 2016. As I've said, and I echo any sort of intelligent people, that is professors who've done research for years and years at colleges all around the country, these urban areas need to be managed by a single government. All the big cities in the U.S. that are doing really well have consolidated the cities and the townships and the counties into one big one. There's economies of scale, but there's also a chance to make things less confusing, less complicated, and to get things done. One of the crazy suggestions I know was that Wayne County should become Wayne the City, or just expand Wayne the City to be the whole area, or call it something else, call it Detroit, whatever. So happy to see that happen someday. That would be smart, but we're not smart. There's politics involved. However, good news, of course, just this week, the Water Commission that actually represents the Tri-County area is now in charge of Detroit Water. So there's input from the suburbs now on that committee, and hopefully changes will happen. It makes total sense to have that overview and input from all concerned. Okay. Craig Foran says, "Speaking of elections, did you know that by the time we actually see repairs being made to our roads and feeling the full impact on wallets, most of those who voted for and signed off on this fiasco will be gone?" He says, "It's kind of hard to impeach people who aren't there, isn't it?" Yes. And from another angle, who in their right mind will even run for the State House or Senate going forward, he says, knowing they'll be blamed for the impending disaster. Interesting point. In 2016, he says, "I'd like to see the legislature force the consolidation of many of the 550 separate school districts we have in the state." He says that's at least 200 too many. And that's from a study by Michigan State University's Education Policy Center that's come out. So smart people doing a lot of research. And says we'd save statewide $612 million a year after the initial cost. And so there you go. And he says he hopes we can get rid of the Headley Amendment. Yeah, that's not going to happen. He says, "We haven't seen serious inflation in decades, and the draconian restrictions of Headley have hamstrung every city, including Dearborn, folks, If you've heard Mayor O'Reilly's State of the City address for the last couple of years, township and school district in the state, Howie says, first, the 2007-08 housing collapse decimated the local property tax revenues. Then, as property values started to regain their value, the related increase in tax revenues was limited, even though the cost of providing public services certainly kept accelerating. Headley made sense in the 1970s. It made no sense whatsoever in the 21st century. He says, I'd like to see emergency managers also go away in 2016 forever. They're a figment of a state that creates a disaster, then jumps it to fix the problems it's created. I'm not sure it's the right grammar, but I did read it correctly. He says, that's called chutzpah, or just guts, you know. He says, but then he qualifies, or Michigan Republican politics, if you will. Because a lot of people feel that way. Besides Craig, that you cut funds to the schools and the cities, you cut services, and guess what? People go broke. Okay? There was supposed to be a big payment years ago to the Detroit public school system from the state of Michigan. They never sent it. They never paid it. It was hundreds of millions of dollars. And that was one of the reasons that they got into emergency financial management as a school district 5-6 years ago. And after four emergency managers of the Detroit Public Schools, they're now, I just thought I heard this moring was like they're $1 billion in debt. So thank you very much, emergency financial managers, and no thanks whatsoever to our legislature or our governor for doing the right things. Of course, Governor Snyder does have a proposal out there, and he wants to get it passed by the legislature. It's an idea to break up the city of Detroit into two school districts, one to help pay off the debt and the other to sort of take over later. And it's like a 5-year plan, and I don't know if it'll work or not. Some people have said yes, it might, but will the legislature in Lansing do it? Because part of it requires about, I think, $300 million in cash to be thrown at Detroit school system to help it out. And Republican legislators, most of them not from this area, really don't care. And of course, they're term limited anyway, so what the heck? They can vote however they want to. They don't like Detroit for one reason or the other. Hey, don't give it anything. And they'll be gone before anybody can come back at them. Hope that's not the case. If you're a good Republican, you care about our children, about our environment. Well, you're rare, first of all. There aren't many of you, so watch out. So there you go. That's Craig Foran. And so I hope things happen. Here's commentary, so I can drink some of my tea here. Commentary from Jack Lesenberry about Snyder signing another bad bill on a promise the legislature will fix it. Here's Jack Lesenberry from Michigan Radio.
I'm Jack Lesenberry. There are a lot of people, some of them Republicans, who were shocked yesterday afternoon when Governor Rick Snyder signed the bitterly controversial campaign finance bill. Many insiders expected he would veto it. In fact, the Detroit News, whose editorial page is sort of a house organ for the Republican Party, urged the veto. Most attention in recent days centered on a provision that appears to prevent libraries or municipalities from providing any information designed to help voters understand what's in a ballot proposal within 2 months of an election. Yesterday, in signing Senate Bill 571, the governor said he didn't believe the bill really did that and added that legislative leaders had promised him they'd try to pass a new law fixing that. Now, that's a somewhat novel approach to government. Sign a bad bill on a promise the legislature will fix it later. But it's clear in retrospect that we've all been focusing too much on that particular clause. For one thing, this was a textbook study in how legislation should not be made. This started out as a short, essentially non-controversial bill meant to improve the way political contributions are collected by both union and corporate political action committees. Then, at the very last minute, a bunch of amendments were dumped into the bill that made it more than 4 times as long. In today's Detroit Free Press, columnist Brian Dickerson shows that even now, nobody's too sure who is behind many of these amendments, and that many of the Republicans who voted for the bill had no real idea what was in the final version, including veteran Senator Mike Cole, the sponsor of the original law. Some have buyer's remorse. But it's now clear the real reason certain forces wanted this passed have little or nothing to do with libraries providing information to voters. The final bill is expressly meant to hurt political funding for unions, not corporations. It would allow General Motors to collect payroll donations for GM's Political Action Committee, but would outlaw similar payroll deductions meant for the United Auto Workers. It would also effectively double the amount a PAC could donate to pay off expenses on any single political campaign, giving such committees that much more sway over candidates. The Free Press quotes one Republican who voted for these bills, Dave Pagel of Berrien Springs, as saying, "It is part of this troubling process that you don't know who's behind this or what their motives are." I would say it's almost equally troubling that representatives like Pagel voted for this, though they, as he said, were ignorant of what it meant. Democrats, by the way, seem to have been as ignorant as the Republicans. As has often been the case during the Snyder years, their opposition yesterday seems to have been confined mostly to whimpering. There doesn't seem to be a fiery orator in the bunch capable of arousing public outrage. Analysts have noted correctly that this bill gives even more power to big money corporate interests. But what we need to stop doing is asking, as one columnist did, why Governor Snyder keeps going along with the legislature's hard right agenda. It should now be very clear that it's his agenda, too.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
You're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. The show is the new WHFR Journal for today, Friday, January the 8th, 2016. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor and host of the show. Happy to have you with us. Also, I have to mention, and there's so many of these things that come back at you, there's the gag order legislation, okay? Legislation includes many important campaign finance reforms that protect the integrity of our election process, Snyder said. I understand there is confusion about how the bill impacts the use of public resources to disseminate factual information prior to an election. This provision needs to be clarified, and I am working with my partners in the legislature on a follow-up bill to address these concerns, unquote. Well, as most people would say, you don't approve something into law if it's not a good law. If it's got problems, veto it, Governor Snyder. Does the nerd governor not have any guts here? And send it back. Oh, he wants his Detroit Public Schools proposal to pass, even though most Republicans don't like it. So he's trying to be nice to the Republicans on anything else? He was nice for a couple of years, hoping he'd get the roads fixed like 3 years ago. And that didn't work until this year after a ballot proposal failed because the legislature didn't want to do anything themselves. And then they get this proposal that won't fix the roads well enough or until 2 years from now, and you know, which is not right either. And Representative Dave Kinesic from he was a Democrat from Dearborn Heights, said it started out as a pretty good bill. When it came back, it was bad. That is, came back from the Senate to the House. From the House to the Senate, I guess. He's in the Senate. He's a senator now, yes. When it came back, he says it was bad. It goes against everything the government should be trying to do, unquote. And some of those were mentioned in Lessenberry's comments right there. But the big problem for the city of Dearborn and other cities, and the part that should be changed, is this requirement that any public body or person acting for a public body shall not, during the period 60 days before an election in which a local ballot question appears on the ballot, use public funds or resources for a communication by means of radio, television, mass mailing, or pre-recorded telephone message if that communication references the local ballot question and is targeted to the relevant electorate where the local ballot question appears on the ballot. Unquote. Well, that is just crazy. That is just crazy. A Lincoln Park superintendent, Terry Dangerfield, that's no joke, like Rodney Dangerfield, he said, it's against everything Governor Snyder has touted during his administration. This would stop schools and any other public body from providing factual information to residents. That's right. If it was 60 days before an election, and, oh, I don't know, the city of Dearborn wanted to renew a millage, okay, or a tax that they already have, just a renewal, folks. But people might be a little confused or uncertain of what it means, or is it a renewal or what? He couldn't talk about it in any media. He couldn't send out any postcards. He couldn't come on WHFR, a non-commercial radio station, and talk about it. He couldn't have a, you know, anything. Couldn't say anything. They can't use public funds or resources for any communication. So, I mean, resources, that mean they send out people from the government to be spokespersons, let's say in neighborhood associations, to try to explain the administration's point of view. Oh, it's just crazy. It's absolutely crazy. So, now it is true that the city and the people of the city who want to see something pass, whether it's renewal or something new, any city, will now have to form a committee, a separate independent committee, and raise money themselves. Whereas the city already has access to, cable TV, and if, at almost no cost, they can get their message out. Okay. It's crazy. And I understand this package was approved in the dead of night, and the exact wording wasn't known to anyone, and most of the representatives, including the Democrats, didn't even know what the wording was. And yes, and of course that one representative Lessenberry mentioned was too stupid to even understand it. I'm sorry, I have to use that word, because he admitted it himself. Yeah, I didn't understand it. He read it, I guess. At least he was claiming he did. But most representatives didn't even read it. They voted on it, didn't even read it. So we get all these laws, a lot of crazy laws, and of course the question was raised, who came up with this? Where did they come from? What agenda? Well, I can tell you, anything that makes voting more difficult comes from the Republican Party and those that support it. Okay, it's my opinion, but take a look at it. If the poor people are the ones that you want to keep away from voting, you want to make it harder for them to vote, you want to make it so that they can't understand what's good for them or bad for them. And maybe that'll discourage them from even voting. Ooh. Because the poor people who are hurting the most, including and the middle class too, who are hurting also in this society, you don't want them to vote, because then they would vote against things that the rich people, apparently, the only ones the Republicans care about. Oh, yeah, the people that provide the jobs. Yeah, well, where are the extra jobs? Jack Lessenberry said in one of his columns in Metro Times the last couple of weeks. Where are the extra jobs that extra $1.8 billion tax cut to Michigan businesses have come from? I mean, where are those jobs? Count them up. What did that $1.8 billion tax cut do? Keep a few businesses in the state? Attract a couple more? Perhaps. I know we have attracted a couple of new businesses. But then even that data center that's going up outside Grand Rapids, going to be a big deal, and maybe 900,000 new jobs there. They're giving them a tax credit, which will be hundreds of millions of dollars probably over 10 years that the state won't get. Is that the way you have to bribe businesses to locate in your state? Yeah, that's the way it is. Well, as I've said on this show, that ought to be against the law at the federal level. No state or city can give a tax cut to any business. They have to pay, every business has to pay the same level of taxes, period. Okay? And even the conservative think tank in Michigan, they have one website they do is, it's called the Mackinac Center or the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Michigan Capital Connection is one of their faux websites. Oh, it's not faux, it's real, but, you know, it's their conservative think tank. Even they're saying there should be no incentives for any businesses because that costs extra money to the state, right? And I think that's true. Figure out a tax rate for all businesses in the state and stick to it. All these extra incentives, that doesn't help. In the long run, hasn't been proven to help. I know, what about incentives for good things like clean air and clean water? Well, just put the regulations in place. They either stop polluting and they start doing better things for the environment, or they're gone. We're going to prosecute them. And yes, they deserve to be sent to jail. Yes, yeah, not just slapped on the hand and given an extra request of some sort. Oh, my goodness. In 5 minutes, we're going to have Highway 61, Kitty Love, in the driver's seat for the Best in Blues and special tribute in many ways. It will always be, but especially today for, of course, the passing of Joanne Korchinska this last Wednesday here in Dearborn. So I have some things up. I hope you go and read the local papers. I hope you go to a lot of websites and keep up on things. Oh, one last small issue. And by the way, the Metro Times, a free newspaper. Find out where you can pick it up. It's delivered places Wednesday afternoon, evening around town. It's free. They have more good investigative journalism and strong opinions to challenge you than any other newspaper in this area. They're not just an entertainment paper anymore. And so I highly recommend them. And keep, you know, keep looking things up. Keep thinking about them. Finally, let's see. Libertarian Party of Wayne County. What are they about? Well, why don't you go to their meeting? It's, it's the first, I think it's the first Thursday every month. They had a meeting last night. I didn't get to it. At Tijuana's Authentic Mexican Kitchen right here on Ford Road in Detroit. But Libertarian Party, we're going to let you know about meetings of all alternative political parties that might give you a choice other than Democrat and Republican. But coming up, a special consensus meeting from the League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, Money and Politics, Saturday, January 23rd, just 2 hours, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. At Christ Episcopal Church, 120 North Military. And they're going to be talking and have some voters there and trying to get your opinions and your input. You don't have to be a member, I don't believe, to participate in that. Find out, I mean, sure, they'll let you attend and see what's going on. Tell them Jay sent you. That won't do anything for you. Oh, come early for refreshments. So that's Saturday, January 23rd, a couple weeks away. 10 a.m. to 12 noon. We'll mention that again in the future. And here is the reading of a short story called Ferdinand by Joanne Korchinska. It's introduced by yours truly, but we're going to go off with this today. It's WHFR Dearborn. Hi, this is Jay Koronek, WHFR station advisor. Jumpstart is an organization that has been bringing at-risk preschool children and caring adults together in intensive year-long relationships since 1993 in order to build the vital literacy, social, and emotional skills that children need to thrive. Jumpstart is working towards the day every child in America enters school prepared to succeed. Today, Thursday, September 20th, 2007, Jumpstart's Read for the Record campaign is joined by members of our WHFR staff. Now here is Joanne Korchinska reading Ferdinand by Monroe Leaf.
Once upon a time in Spain, there was a little bull, and his name was Ferdinand. All the other little bulls he lived with would run and jump and butt their heads together, but not Ferdinand. He liked to sit just quietly and smell the flowers. He had a favorite spot out in the pasture under a cork tree. It was his favorite tree, and he would sit in its shade all day and smell the flowers. Sometimes his mother, who was a cow, would worry about him. She was afraid he would be lonesome all by himself. "Why don't you run and play with the other bulls and skip and butt your head?" she would say. But Ferdinand would shake his head. "I like it better here where I can sit, just quietly, and smell the flowers." His mother saw that he was not lonesome, and because she was an understanding mother, even though she was a cow, she let him just sit there and be happy. As the years went by, Ferdinand grew and grew until he was very big and strong. All the other bulls who had grown up with him in the same pasture would fight each other all day. They would butt each other and stick each other with their horns. What they wanted most of all was to be picked to fight at the bullfights in Madrid. But not Ferdinand. He still liked to sit just quietly under the cork tree and smell the flowers. One day, five men came in with very funny hats to pick the biggest, fastest, roughest bull to fight in the bullfights in Madrid. All the other bulls ran around snorting and butting, leaping and jumping, so the men would think that they were very strong and fierce, and pick them. Ferdinand knew they wouldn't pick him, so he didn't care. He went out to his favorite cork tree to sit down. He didn't look where he was sitting, and instead of sitting on the cool grass in the shade, he sat on a bumblebee. Well, if you were a bumblebee and a bull sat on you, what would you do? You would sting him, and that is just what this bee did to Ferdinand. Wow, did it hurt! Ferdinand jumped up with a snort. He ran around puffing and snorting, butting and pawing the ground as if he were crazy. The five men saw him, and they all shouted with joy. Here was the largest and fiercest bull of all, just the one for the bullfights in Madrid. So they took him away for the bullfight day in a cart. What a day it was! Flags were flying, bands were playing, and all the lovely ladies had flowers in their hair. They had a parade into the bull ring. First came the bandoleros with long, sharp pins with ribbons on them to stick in the bull and make him mad. Next came the picadors who rode skinny horses, and they had long spears to stick in the bull and make him madder. Then came the matador, the proudest of all. He thought he was very handsome and bowed to the ladies. He had a red cape and a sword and was supposed to stick the bull last of all. Then came the bull. And you know who it was, don't you? Ferdinand. They called him Ferdinand the Fierce, and all the bandoleros were afraid of him, and the picadors were afraid of him, and the matador was scared stiff. Ferdinand ran in the middle of the ring, and everyone shouted and clapped because they thought he was going to fight fiercely, and butt, and snort, and stick his horns around. But not Ferdinand. When he got to the middle of the ring, he saw the flowers in all the lovely ladies' hair, and he just sat down quietly and smelled. He wouldn't fight and be fierce, no matter what they did. He just sat and smelled. And the bandoleros were mad, and the picadors were madder, and the matador was so mad he cried because he couldn't show off with his cape and sword. So they had to take Ferdinand home. And for all I know, he is sitting there still, under his favorite cork tree, smelling the flowers just quietly. He is very happy.
Please support reading in your everyday life, and especially as an example for our children. For more information, you can go to Jumpstart's website, readfortherecord.org. This is WHFR.FM.